Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You. Today, it is my privilege to have a very, very accomplished psychologist and an author with me, Dr. Rajat Mitra. Rajat, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Dr. Mitra is a master's in clinical psychology. He's done his PhD in attachment theory. He is a professor of psychology at Amity University. He received several awards, and he's the author of The Infidel Next Door. Rather, tell me a little bit about what you would say are three key milestones in your life or career.
The three key milestones in my life was, one, to become a psychologist. And I saw that how young people were heading towards the mental illness and had nowhere to turn to. I'm talking of 80s, at that time when few men, almost virtually no men, would pick up psychology as a career. And I was told that there is no future in this. Why you are going for this? This is a women's profession. You will have no job. So that was a major milestone. The second milestone was when I had gone to a police station regarding some work. It was to get my mother's passport. And I saw that how a family was, being tormented because they were believed to be suspects. And they had just gone through a trauma, and it affected me deeply because I felt that traumatized people in police stations or anywhere should not be have to go through this kind of a torture. So that was the second milestone, because that made me work towards in the criminal justice system. And the third milestone was when I started with working with human rights defenders across Asia. And I saw that how, the system can persecute the individual, trying to make him powerless, and the individual rises against that. So unknown people who had virtually, nothing to fall back upon, rose against the system. And I saw that how history has been shaped by these people, these individuals who decided not to bow to an unjust and unfair system. So these, I would say, are the three key milestones. And thank you for asking me. I never thought of these questions before.
No, as I was mentioning to you, this show is entirely about the incredible amount of knowledge, experience, and wisdom. So many good, successful people like you have.
Yeah.
So, moving on, Rajat, let's talk a little bit about mental health.
Okay.
How critical is it for people around me to recognize that I may be having issues of mental health, and what are the symptoms that they should look for?
Okay. I think mental health is a very important concept, for people. In fact, I can tell you that when we were working in our last office, it was a mental health organization. And it was just our second day, and our neighbor came up, and he was extremely angry. He told me that, it is a mental health place. People who are mad will come here, and I would rather have a brothel next to me than a mental health place. So we were, worried. I tried to tell him that, the people we work with are, disabled, and that he was not willing to listen. Just a few days later after this, he had a problem. His son attempted suicide, and he called me up and he said, can you help me out? So I did that. And then he came to apologize. And he said, look, I'm sorry, Dr. Mitra. I have said a lot of hurtful things to you. But I realized that, when it struck me what I needed, and because you were next door to me, your office, we were in a residential area, actually. We were, it was a corner flat somebody had given us to work in. Mm-hmm. That changed his perspective. So when it strikes us, then we know. Right. And that is true with probably, almost the entire population. The second is about mental health, about poor people. Mental health in our country is still limited to the upper class, upper middle class. And what bothered me most was the lowest psychosocial strata does not get any access to that. And what I found in my work in the criminal justice system, we were a psychologist, a group of psychologists running a mental health service, is that how many of them actually could tell what had happened with them, the crime, the trauma, and it helped in the process of justice. So what made me aware was the macro level change that mental health can bring about, awareness of it can bring about. I saw young girls and women who stood up to their rapist and testified in court, you know, which we couldn't imagine doing so. So that's why I would say that its impact, its awareness is increasing tremendously.
So tell me, if even though awareness is increasing a lot, a psychological condition or a problem of a mental health or depression is still talked about in very hushed tones.
Yes.
What will it take for people to understand that, like we get sick in so many of our organs, the brain is just another organ which could have a problem and it's curable?
Sure. I think this has been the same situation in almost every country, you know, and if you see the beginning of mental health and how mental health grew, everywhere it has been the same. And what has helped is more and more survivors coming forward and talking about their stories. It was the same in USA till the time when two things happened, you know. President Kennedy gave an impetus to that because he had seen mental health issues. You know, one of his relatives was severely afflicted, and how it was helped. And he realized that I, being the president of USA, have a duty towards it. So there was political leadership, one, that helped. Secondly, survivors came forward in large numbers to talk about themselves, to say how they have recovered, everyone from celebrities to ordinary individuals. So which kind of produced a sense of mass awareness in people, making it look banal and not something which was different or evil or something which has to do with, say, past life or my karma or, something which is God's will that I'm going through this. So all those myths were washed away as large number of survivors. And it's very important in India that we have survivors come forward to talk about it. The more people talk about it, it would go.
So, you know, my mother had dementia, advanced dementia in her late life because of some personal shocks that she went through when I lost my youngest brother. I used to go with her for her treatment on a regular basis. And I used to wonder, how do you, as a doctor, determine success with your patient?
I think I determine success by, you know, a different ways. And as a doctor, I have worked in the field. So, for example, I worked in Tihar prisons for 15 years. And it was a project to reduce violence in the prisoners. And the yardstick was something very strange. I mean, the head warder told me that, sir, yahan pe roj jo hai bulb tootte hain, because people have to do activities. So if you are working over here and the bulb stays intact, know that you are successful. So we worked for six. This is ward number 14, jail number 4, Tihar prisons for records. So we worked for 6 months. And after 6 months, I got a call from Kiran Bedi's office. We had started the program together, Kiran Bedi, myself, and Dr. Harinder Sethi. It was a violence management program. She says, can you come over today? So I went over, and there was the head of the ward, Jathedar. He was sitting. And he was telling us with gleaming eyes that, sir, aaj bulb nahi toota. So which was a thing. I mean, I speak of it at clinical conferences and people laugh. I mean, that was a thing that, yes, the prisoners were taking to our program and they had decided not to, you know, break the bulb, right? I mean, of course, this is a, you know, different situation, but each situation we measure success in different ways. Like, for example, in working with sexually abused children and women, I would determine success that they stick to the long due, arduous, trial process. Mm-hmm. And despite allurements, threats, because of the counseling and therapy that we continue to provide, they have not given up. They stand by it. And I realize that the need for justice in people is innate. Mm-hmm. And as psychologists, we are only supporting it. We are only helping to, kind of bring it out. We are not doing anything extraordinary. We are just supporting them, right? Mm-hmm. Coming to, for example, other areas like trauma, depression, and violence that I have worked with, sometimes the results takes place after 10 years. Somebody I met the other day at the airport, he came up to me and he said, "Are you so-and-so?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Do you remember you came to me and you talked to me about this?" So at first I couldn't recall. And he said, "You know what? That was the day, if you had not come, I would have gone ahead and committed either suicide or killed somebody. I did not do it. And each time in the last 10 years, I have thought of your face, your words, and I've used that to calm myself down," right? I had forgotten about it, but it made me realize that, we cannot look for instant gratification in people in this field, right? So sometimes it takes months and years. And I don't invest that way in the outcome of therapy. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people get affected or upset by what we have said. They come back to you after years, after months, to say that what they have achieved for themselves. Mm-hmm. So, of course, there are also situations where people get up and say, "Okay, what you have told me, it is something great, and I'll remember it. Can I shake your hand?" I say, "Yeah, sure, you can shake." There have been people who have asked to hug, and I say, "Sure, you can do that, provided, certain, gender issues are taken care of." And they go away and they never come back. So it's a one session cure that they have gone through, and I've forgotten about it. So there are different, ways in which we decide that. Yeah.
Correct. Very interesting. Without sharing any names or patient confidentialities, can you talk about maybe one or two difficult patients?
Okay, I think I don't see anyone as a difficult patient. I see everyone as a challenging patient, patient. And I also don't use the word patient very much because I realize that when I stop using the word patient and I use the word client, my attitude changes. I'll tell you about two patients quickly. This is someone who was diagnosed with schizophrenia, and he came to our center, Sanjeevani, where I used to work. He had come there. The parents were very well off. They had tried and gone through almost every, therapist, including Milton Erickson. I mean, he was his personal, he put a lot of focus upon him at that time. Milton Erickson is regarded as the world's greatest hypnotherapist of the last century, and really a genius whom I admire. So when he came over, I was kind of nervous. I said, "Okay, he has been treated by Milton Erickson, and he has suggested that he should see someone in India." So he was regarded as, he was from, I can name the doctor, Dr. Alok Sareen. And, it was an extremely violent person. And it took almost 1 year, year and a half to kind of, bring him to a state where he became okay. And he opened a business center for himself, and he's doing well. Then one day when he had done that, then Dr. Sareen called me aside and he said, "Rajat, I want to say this, that the other day there was a psychiatric conference and three psychiatrists, we met together and discussed it. And we were saying that he has been the most difficult patient of our career." Mm-hmm. So, and the fact that he's able to recover to this level, it is really stupendous. And I think this is a great example of medication and psychotherapy, then milieu therapy, rehabilitation therapy, all working together in unison, which is a very important thing because mental health is, multidisciplinary. It is interdisciplinary, where psychiatrists, psychologists, social workers, the family, we all work together to help client to come to terms with it. So we discussed the different therapeutic steps that we had done. The most important steps was building up trust and attachment with this person who had completely, lost it. And it was a great thing when we were taking the members outside for a trip for 7 days, and he joined and he thoroughly enjoyed. Of course, he stayed in my room and I was responsible for that. But that was a breakthrough for him. And he talked about, you know, how difficult life has been for him. Every night he would stay up and we would, you know, carry on talking. I mean, Freud, I'm sure, would, you know, turn in his grave if he were to hear that I'm having sessions till 2 o'clock in the night with my patients. But he would, before going to sleep for 7 days, he talked to me, you know, just like a child with his parent. And I listened and he could unburden himself. And I realized how important perhaps this moment was for him. So he was, one of the most difficult patients that I, dealt with. The other patient I'll quickly talk about is, I'm full of memories when you ask me this question, and it's very difficult to choose, but I'll just choose someone. This was a girl whom we met as part of our violence management project in a police station in New Delhi, in South Delhi. And while talking, she told us that she's being sexually abused by her father, and he did it last many years back. So we said that then, you know, we need to lodge a case of 376, sexual assault. And the policeman there said that, look, this happened several years back. He has not been doing so. And there is no evidence for it. It is just her word against the father's word. And you will not be able to, you know, do anything. So why don't we just forget it? But I said, my conscience doesn't allow me. I mean, I cannot sleep tonight by, you know, saying that. So I went back and told the girl that what you have told me, would you go ahead? And your father did it a couple of years back. She says, yes, I will, because I know why my father has stopped, because my younger sister is growing up and his eyes are on her, and I will not let her do it, let him do it. So she lodged a case. We fought the battle in the court and everything was against it. And, but finally she was threatened. We were threatened, we were told to take the case back. It was one of the most powerful lawyers who told me in the court that, Dr. Mitra, I haven't lost a case in my life. Okay. And I want you to remember that. He was mocking us, threatening us. He came with a group of lawyers, almost 12 of them, who would surround me like cricket players, in a field, intimidate me. They intimidated the girl, the mother, and she stood her ground. We stood her ground, and she would talk. And then the judge finally was forced to, give, he understood that it had happened. An incident, which made it possible. He said how do you know that, how should I believe you? So when he assaulted you, what do you notice from that time? She said, there is a very big mark on his thigh near the genitals. So he said that, okay, why didn't you tell it before? She said, because nobody asked me. So, the judge asked that to be examined, and it was found exactly the way it was. And he said, okay, that settles for me. And the truthfulness in her voice, the determination, I have no doubts about it. It was covered by the magazine Outlook, in a whole article. It was called Doctor's Orders, and how for the first time, a psychologist's testimony along with support to the victim helped to find justice. And let me tell you, this was a Muslim girl from one of the most disadvantaged areas of Delhi. Everyone pressured her, but she stood her ground and she said, no, I stand for the safety of my younger sister. So issues like this, where you have to carry on for years, which is painstaking, detailed work, is something that I would consider challenging. And I think that I hope that in times to come, many more psychologists pick that up and do it themselves.
I sincerely hope so too. So I've got time for two more questions for you.
Okay.
Dr. Mitra, mental health affects everybody from young to old. The millennials, who are the future of our country, I find they face a lot of stresses.
Yeah.
What have been your experience of seeing challenges amongst young patients? What kind of challenges are there?
I think there are many challenges. One is that there are, first of all, right now, if you see in the COVID situation, they are dealing with a digital world. The definitions of things are changing. So, and there is increased detachment in society. Like, for example, the kind of attachments our generation had, or even the generation after that. So that attachment is broken. And that is one of the major reasons that I find young people, going through it. The second thing which I find is that values for young people are becoming relative as a process. I don't blame them for it, because that's many young people today say, if it feels okay, then it is okay. For us, values were absolute, this is good, this is bad. Right. And making things relative is making it very difficult, because that makes it subjective and for you to, decide. The third, I would say, is what is called process-oriented thinking, right? Now, if you look at a television today, in 1 second, there are 10 images flashing. In our times, there were 10, for 10 seconds, one image would stay through. So we could connect, we could bond, and our mind could process. So process-oriented thinking is going away, and that is leading to more detachment, separation, and grief in young people. So these are, in a nutshell, are some of the major challenges for the young people.
So then I'm going to ask you now two questions for you personally.
Okay.
My first question is that, where do you draw your inspiration from? I mean, you're helping so many people who've got their own set of challenges. Where does Rajat draw his inspiration from?
Okay, I draw my inspiration from meditation, from reading, from sometimes turning, inwards. I draw my inspiration from supervision. I have a psychologist who's a supervisor for me, who helps me with issues. And also, I have learned to detach myself from the issues of other person. I don't make their issues my issues. It happened to me in the beginning, and it still happens. Like, if I see, for example, in working with refugees, I cry. But then I'm a human being. I let it come out, right? I'm aware of what I'm going through, and I share that. As long as you are aware and you don't deny it. I remember the words of my supervisor the first time I went to the rehab center, and she asked me, how was your day? And I said, I'm disturbed. I'm not. She said, okay, you're ready for it, because you are in touch with how you are being affected. There was another girl who said, I'm fine. It's okay. Nothing happened. She says, no. This is an unusual place. So until and unless you are affected by it and you are able to talk about it, you will not last into this field.
Very interesting. And my last question to you.
Yeah.
What does success mean to you?
I think success means to me to work with people. Success doesn't mean to me earning a lot of money. That has never been my this. But success for me, for example, would mean doing things for my country, for my people, seeing to it that I'm able to disseminate my knowledge as I'm doing in the university right now, or reaching out to the poorest of the poor to help them with their innate, to bring out the justice within them. So that is something which I would define as my yardstick of success. And I have never been, I've always worked in the community, in the field. And I feel that, you should be true to your people. You should be true to your nation and work through them. I see our nation is going through grief. We have been slaves for many years. And just like, slavery in other countries, people who have not come out of that trauma, like whether it's blacks or whether it is the native populations, we have also been subjugated and traumatized. And this is something that to make people aware of is my goal. And I worked in refugees, I wouldn't call them refugees, with Kashmiri pandits in the camps over there. And, based upon that, I wrote a book, which was The Infidel Next Door, which I want more and more people to read, because it is based on my psychological understanding and analysis of what we have gone through. and be able to deal with the grief and come to terms with it. Like, for example, they have done in South Africa, there was Truth and Reconciliation Commission, or there was healing between Nazis, ex-Nazis and Jews who could deal with the Holocaust. We have also many important issues to discuss. And for me, success would mean working upon those issues to allow healing to happen at a macro level, not at a micro level, not just individually, but something that helps the society as a whole.
That's fantastic. Dr. Mitra, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure and honor speaking to you. Thank you for the incredible work you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.